I asked someone who was really smart with me, a really successful business person. His name was Jim Stovall. I was like, you know, what's like the key to having like a good business or a successful mm-hmm. business? He's like, all you really have to do is do what you say you're going to do.
Yeah.
He's like, then if you want to make it even better, just go one step further.
Like keep it super simple.
Have you ever looked around at others thriving in business and wondered, what's the secret? Welcome to the Hustle Podcast, where we pull back the curtain to reveal people's individual stories of success and failure to bring you real experience that you can pull from to help you reach your personal and professional goals. So let's go.
We're back for another episode, and I'm actually really excited. We have Jason Odell in the house today, and we go from mortgage. Let me see if I get this like transition right. We go from mortgage to car sales to barbecue.
Close.
Car sales, mortgage, barbecue.
Yeah.
Ah, dang. Okay, close. All right. So we went from car sales to the mortgage industry to now we're serving barbecue. And if you don't know Jason Odell, he does amazing barbecue here in Reading. So let's just start. How the heck did we go from sales? Well, sales is part of everything. But how do we go from that to barbecue?
Yeah. So let's take it way back.
Back in the day.
Yeah. There was a period of time where the economy was bad and there's this big crash in like 08 and getting jobs was like not really a thing. Mm-hmm. And so I was kind of scrambling with jobs and I was reading Rich Dad Poor Dad. I think it's his second or third book.
Solid book.
Yeah. Work to learn, not to earn. And so I was like, well, what skills do I want to learn? I have this college degree that's not really doing great, you know, a lot of things for me at the moment.
Yeah.
And I like sales. Like I'm terrible at sales. I should learn sales. So I'm like looking at different sales jobs and like different things going on. And I'm like, I like Toyotas. Toyotas are cool. And I heard my brother worked for him years before and he said they had a great, you know, sales training program.
Yeah.
It's like, that sounds great. So I want to get some training. So I go to Toyota and I mean, essentially all I had to do is pass a drug test. Like yeah. That would like, they pretty much hire anybody that passes a drug test. And for 6 months it was awful. Like
a car pulls in and they're like, or you walk out, everybody's like walks away. They're like, this is terrible.
Well, and it's just like, you know, it wasn't super fun, and they guarantee you minimum wage because in California you have to make minimum mm-hmm. wage. So I wasn't really making any money, and I was terrible at it. And I'm actually super introverted. Mm. Anytime I take one of a personality test, I score very, very high on introversion.
Interesting.
And yep. Most people don't know that, but I've learned to be very social. Mm-hmm. Part of the sales part, right? Mm-hmm. And so I just remember going about 6 months in, I was like, you know, if I make minimum wage one more time, I'm going to go count beans in a closet. Because mm-hmm. clearly,
yeah,
this sucks. Nice. And that was the last time I made minimum wage.
From that day forward, we weren't counting beans in a closet.
No, yeah, we were good. So I became top three sales guy almost every month for the next 2 years. Took on the internet department. So I got a lot of internet leads. I was really known for really good follow-up and customers coming back.
Cool. Yeah.
And asking for me.
That's literally core to sales, you know, follow up, and speed to lead.
Yep. Those kinds of things. So, as I was kind of in that jam, I was like looking around, I was like, I don't really want to move up in this industry. And so I was looking for something else that was similar, but had more potential. Mm-hmm. And, I wanted to get back into banking. Banking was like one of the things I wanted to get into, but that's when the 08 banking crash, right? So I started talking to people I know that worked in the bank and they were all mortgage guys. Everything like from my cousin to a buddy from high school. They all worked in banks and they're all mortgage guys. And as I started to kind of peel back the layers and I was like, this is similar to what I do, but it seems a lot better.
Mm-hmm. A little bit elevated.
A little more elevated. Yeah. People think you're special if you're a mortgage guy and car sales, it's like, you know, not so much. And it's actually a lot more barrier to entry.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a guy that while I was getting hired, never passed his mortgage exam.
It's a hard test.
It's not easy.
I don't have it. Dylan took his test for it. He has his license, but he was like, this is the hardest thing ever.
So I went into mortgages and there was the core training.
With that, what year did you get into mortgage?
Been about end of 2012, beginning of 2013.
Okay, gotcha.
And I mean, they had some great training. Mm-hmm. The core training was built into that, the fabric of that company. And
were you with Chris Lamb? Because he does
coaching. I didn't start with Chris. I ended up moving over, but Summit Funding, which okay. is actually the CEO, Todd Scrima,
yep.
founder of the core and all that kind of stuff. And that was a brutal first year.
I think
any real estate, like your first year is so rough.
Yeah.
And rates like went up like a couple percentage points in the middle of that.
I think Dylan's first year in real estate, he sold a mobile home.
I think I did three loans.
Yeah.
And there's two other guys that started about the same time. And I think they did like two. So I was like, I'm not doing that bad. Yeah. But then very quickly, at the beginning of my second year, things started to click and off to the races. And then I moved over, worked with Chris, and Chris was pretty, he had like a loan assistant and then there was me, and that's where gotcha. We started. I got to watch him grow his business and I learned a ton. But I got I hit a point of like, this is, comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really want to grow that business. I wasn't that excited about it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't super fun for me.
Right.
And, getting into barbecue, I've always enjoyed the outdoors. I've always enjoyed cooking.
Mm.
And so I kind of put away a lot of my hobbies and moved into, Saturday was barbecue day,
mm-hmm.
throw some parties in my house. Started building different smokers. I'm pretty nerdy.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll log a lot of YouTube hours on barbecue. I've got tons of books. I read a lot. The driving question was, how do I make the best, tri-tip? How do I make the best brisket? Mm-hmm. What does it take? And so one of the ideas was like, okay, I need a better cooker. Where do I don't want to spend $5,000-$6,000.
Right.
I think I could build one. So a lot of YouTube, my brother,
jeez.
We welded this, big smoker is a 250 gallon propane tank and cut another one in half and welded it all together. It was about a 6-week project on the weekends. And at that time it was purely fun, purely hobby.
Yeah.
Right. Like restaurant catering, all that kind of stuff would be a terrible idea.
Right.
I did some friends' weddings for free. The shift happened. I mean, I kind of had these ideas. I had friends saying, I'm like, nah, that's just a terrible idea. I'm making good money. That would be really irresponsible to go,
totally.
And leave this and for my family. I went to a seminar that, was supposed to, and I was thinking of leveraging my real estate, right? That was mm-hmm. the whole idea. But I come out actually with a goal around barbecue.
How can I leverage my what did you get out of it, sir? Be better at barbecue.
Well, it was very much around mindset,
yeah.
and belief systems. And so instead of having this goal around, so much volume and loans, mm-hmm. I came out with, well, what if I could just book 10 catering gigs?
Totally.
And take 30 days to do that. Well, I ended up doing that in 2 weeks. And one of the ideas I had around Monday was like, I can just make my own event. I know mm-hmm. tons of people, like all these years in sales and people, a lot of people know I can cook barbecue. Mm-hmm. So I actually, one of the coffee houses, The Stirring at that time,
yeah.
talked to them and did my first pop-up event out of that coffee house. And I told them, I was like, I could have 100 people here. We'll do tri-tip sandwiches. You guys don't really do food, right? And at that time, they didn't really do food. And you guys can sell drinks and we'll, split some of the stuff, like easy peasy. And I was like, walked away from that meeting. I'm like, oh my gosh, I just said I'd get 100 people here. Dear Lord.
please come 100 people.
I literally was sending out text messages to everyone. I was like, you need to come. If we even think we're friends or want to be friends, you better be there.
If you want to see a future of me and our friendship, you have to be there.
Have to be there. And text message, everything, Facebook events, like all the things I could hit. And I mean, we had a huge line. It was super successful.
You're like, okay, maybe not this many people.
Yeah. It was a little too much. But that was the early beginnings. And I think when I went to that seminar, I think one of the things that shifted for me was, what if I could do this for a living? What if I could mm-hmm. take care of my family? What if the most responsible thing for me to do was to do something I'm actually really passionate about?
Mm-hmm. Like the deep why of like what you love to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's really been, the whole barbecue thing has really been about, doing something that I just really enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
it's play.
Mm-hmm.
I would do it for free.
Mm-hmm.
I often still do it for free, you mm-hmm. know, when I'm at home.
Yeah.
And that's made all the difference, really.
So now that you, like I've said to people, if like they haven't tried it, they're missing out. But now that you've kind of built this business in terms of basically being known as the barbecue, catering, all that, like now this has been obviously a different kind of, like, sales are easy. Like food, if you service well, I feel like our area is pretty easy. If you can service well, provide a good product, and you know how to like take care of your customers, like you'll get that repeat business. Like it's a very, like, our business is very like repeat referral, like word mm-hmm. of mouth. Like yep. if you tick somebody off, you're done. So with that being said, in scaling, I know that the catering business is a very grueling business because it's like there's not a lot of options here, I feel, or good options. Mm-hmm. So then you just almost like run yourself dry, like go, mm-hmm. go, 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 go. So how, taking it from doing fun, passion, keeping that fire of passion, how have you actually moved and shifted into like building a business
yeah.
that, you know, what's like the next 5-10 years look like for barbecue at O'Dell's?
Yeah. So there's a couple questions there. So the one.
Glad you captured all of them because I don't remember them.
Well, okay. So, you know, there's definitely a big difference when you go from like a passion hobby business, which is yep. what it kind of first turned into, okay, now I'm going to do this for a living.
Totally.
And that's a big shift because when it's a hobby, it's kind of like, I don't really care about your opinion. I don't need to care about your opinion.
Yep.
It's my opinion that matters because this is my hobby, right? Like if you're going golfing for fun.
Yeah.
I don't, whether I get lessons or not, it doesn't really matter.
Totally.
But now if you're like, okay, now I'm going to go golfing to take care of my family,
mm-hmm.
that's a whole different level of seriousness. And so, I mean, one of the big shifts was shifting, making barbecue for just myself.
Mm.
And as a hobby or a hobby business, and then shifting into, well, now I'm making food for other people.
Right.
And still for myself, and how does that fit together?
Mm-hmm.
So that was a wrestling match for sure. And it was a lot of work. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of work in the early days. It was everything from shopping, cooking, prepping, serving, cleaning, and then
prep again the next day. Rinse, repeat, go.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
and I got really good at it.
Yeah.
I took actually a lot of things that I learned from the mortgage industry. I think what's interesting is I asked advice once, and this is kind of came up in their question. I asked someone who was really smart with me, a really successful business person. His name was Jim Stovall. I was like, you know, what's like the key to having like a good business or a successful mm-hmm. business? He's like, all you really have to do is do what you say you're going to do.
Yeah.
He's like, then if you want to make it even better, just go one step further.
Like keep it super simple.
Yeah. Like if you're a caterer who's going to make delicious food and serve on time, if you just do those two things, ta-da.
Ta-da.
Yeah. You're doing what you say. You're hitting the expectation of the customer. And then if you want to go a little bit further, you know, you could just take mm-hmm. it one more step.
Totally.
And so it's not that complicated and it's not always easy.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think as I got busier, right, into this really kind of grind, I started shifting from, okay, what's next level? Do I want to go next level? And the answer was yes. And then it's like, okay, how do I build team?
Mm-hmm. How do I make it sustainable? So it's not just you wearing the hat,
yeah.
doing all the things.
I mean, yeah, right. Wearing the hat and everything had to flow through me.
Yep.
And so then it's systems, processes, core values, and a lot of leadership stuff.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. And so that was a big shift.
Yeah. What was the biggest mistake you made in your growth? Like from going from hobby passion, let's just even say you had a good, like,
yeah.
There's always that like growth, even in our business, like you hit your stride, you hit your home run, like people know you, you're gaining that momentum. Then you go not necessarily stale, but you kind of like cruise and then you like hit that like next bump to go higher in like your growth.
Yeah.
So like in that interim of growing and your growth, like what would you say was like your biggest, I mean, you went from mortgage to food, so I'm sure there's mistakes made, but what was your
Biggest mistake?
You're like, I was perfect the entire time. I'm just kidding.
No, not at all. I mean, one of the things is like sometimes the big mistakes So one of the things that happens is that a lot of times when we make mistakes, it turns into something really good.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, recipes have shifted because of a mistake that was made, because we're like, actually, this might be a better way to do it.
Totally.
But I would say one of the ways, and this is kind of a weird answer, being slow to believe in myself.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the reasons why it's grown kind of slowish, it feels slow to me at least, is I've been slowly believing in myself more and more and what I'm capable of.
Mm-hmm.
And probably not completely trusting myself. And so that kind of slow has really put hesitancy on the growth.
Yeah. Like, can I actually do this? Do I actually want to scale this far?
Am I capable?
What is my team, the culture, the leadership? Yeah. It's like you wear all the hats. I mean, I totally get it. Like growing it. I mean, even like where we are for a while, like a limiting belief in like my first 2 years of real estate is like, oh, I just had a really good year. And it was just like, do I actually have what it takes to like make it sustainable for the next year? Do I have like the systems in place?
Yes.
And so, yeah, I totally understand. Cause that was like our journey or my personal journey of like, all right, the real estate market's amazing. Like, of course I would do great. Anybody would do great. And that was like, you know, okay, at the core, what do we actually have to offer and service that's different than others? So so moving into now where you're at, like everybody always is like, what is Jason up to? What's the goal for like, I mean, obviously catering is probably a huge source of your income and your revenue and everything like that. What's like your next growth scale for your business?
Yeah. So kind of what's next is, So one is just growing our actual catering business. That is the bulk of our business. It always has been. That makes up about, most people don't know this, but about 75 to 80% of our revenue is actually from the catering, and almost all of our net income is as well. And so growing that and getting better at those systems and processes. And then our Thursday, Fridays, which is our only restaurant days, are open to the public. We've actually been, we've actually doubled the revenue in that per week from where we were last year. So one of the big growth things is actually fixing a lot of the messes that kind of happen with that quick instant growth. One of the other things that we just got was our liquor license.
Ooh.
So yeah, so we'll be adding catering for one. We could actually cater and be licensed and permitted to do open bar.
Wow.
And along with Thursday, Fridays, we'll start adding some beer and wine first, and then figure out how to do probably some old fashions and some pre-mixed drinks and stuff like that.
That sounds good.
That's kind of in the near term for the next year. And then in 2025, we're looking to be in a 7-day restaurant situation.
I'm all for that. I'm like just dying.
It's top secret, you know,
public. Do you know where it's going?
Yeah.
Oh, gotcha. Yeah. That's the top secret part. I was like, wow, I'm so honored on the podcast you announced a restaurant.
I mean, it hasn't hit public yet, and there's still some more thing. And the main reason why is that there's still some more things that it gets.
Don't worry, I'll figure out offline where it's going to be,
where it's going to go through. But it'll be 7 days a week, and then basically we'll be running this awesome catering company, and then an awesome 7-day week restaurant that'll be really cool.
I'm stoked. I am very, very stoked for that. The hard part is like the Thursday, Fridays. Like I'm always like, dang it, I missed it again. Gosh darn it. You know? So I'll be stoked for the restaurant. Tagging off one of your thoughts on the, you know, restaurant industry and everything like that and growing into that. But with barbecue, I mean, you probably get people, what is like the secret to, I mean, you don't have to give me like your secrets away if you don't want to, but where do you find most people mess up on barbecue?
Yeah.
That would be probably maybe a more gentle.
I mean, both of them are great questions. So can I ask you a question?
Don't ask it by barbecue because it's going
to
be a no.
Well, what would you say? Well, I mean, you guys are really good realtors in town. So what would you say your secret is to being a good realtor?
That's a great question. I think it's storytelling, like marketing and customer service.
Great. So taking care of people and telling your story as well. And it's really no secret though.
Yeah.
Right. And so same thing with food. I mean, like, I don't think recipes are really a secret.
But the brisket's really good.
The brisket is just salt and pepper.
Really?
Yeah, it's just salt and pepper. That's the big secret.
So there is hope for us out there. There is hope.
Well, so here's the tricky part. It's process.
Yeah. Process.
So, I mean, I built the smokers that we use. Mm-hmm. There are what they call stick burners. So they're mm-hmm. offsets. And I mean, in order to get a backyard one, you either need to build it or spend a lot of money to get one that can maintain heat the way that these can.
Gotcha.
And it's just a lot of care and attention.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what the way we control our temperature with our smokers is what wood we're choosing to put in the fire, because we don't want to close off our oxygen because we're trying to actually burn really clean fire. So a lot of smoking techniques use a dampening type of oxygen flow.
Gotcha.
Which actually burns really dirty and kind of gives a kind of a dirty kind of smoke flavor.
Gotcha.
Where we're actually trying to burn really, really clean, but control temperature with the size or piece of wood that we're putting on the fire.
Interesting.
Which means that basically when our smokers are on, there's someone watching it all night, all day.
Jeez. Yeah. So that's like if you hire somebody, you're like, you are only watching the wood that's burning on the smoker.
It takes someone about 6 months to figure out how to really start to run the smokers well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we'll be starting a shift about 9-10 o'clock tonight that will just run all the way till Friday. Lunch service, because and then Friday night we'll start our brisket for Saturday.
Yeah.
So
that's wild.
So you're passionate about it, like you love it, like
yeah.
And it's, or at least I do. And the people that one of my pit guys is just, he loves that job.
Mm-hmm.
He's been with me for many years.
Yeah.
So really the secret, caring.
Mm-hmm.
Attention to detail, paying attention. It's understanding the process. Like what is that brisket? I mean, the brisket's really fascinating. A lot of these big cuts are like this, but the brisket's kind of a good example. You're literally transforming. I mean, brisket's a terrible cut of meat first and foremost, just to be honest. If you were to like fry it up really quick or just put it in a frying pan, it would be awful.
Mm-hmm.
It's really tough. There's a lot of connectivity tissue in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a terrible cut of meat. However, when you cook it low and slow, and that's, you know, there's some argument on what low and slow actually means.
Don't worry, I'm not going to argue about it.
I mean, for some people it could be like 250, 225.
Yeah.
We're able to push things closer to 275.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. Sure. I find that anywhere over 300, that's like, seems to be too hot, too fast for the brisket. But, at some point, you'll get into a transformation that happens where that connectivity tissue that's really tough and makes it like a rubber band, it will actually transform into gelatin.
Mm.
And gelatin's what they make Jell-O out of.
Yeah.
And it's very, it's that wobbly, like melt-in-your-mouth, buttery mouthfeel that you get.
I'm really hungry right now. Thank you.
And it holds a lot of moisture and there's a lot of good things, but it's got to go through a process. And so really understanding that process, I mean, one of the interesting things about brisket, especially on the colder winter nights, your temperature, your internal temperature will stall out and even sometimes go backwards.
Hmm.
And your cooker is running at 275.
Jeez.
And so you're the classic, they call it the stall, and it happens with other cuts, but it's most dominant in brisket. But if you can imagine, you know, you're setting up, you're getting up early, you know, this brisket's going to take 12 hours.
Mm-hmm.
You're watching your temperature. And then within a few hours, it's already at 160. And then it goes nowhere.
Yeah.
And then even goes backwards maybe. And you're like, something's...
You're like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
What do we do?
Yeah. Right. Your first thought is, oh my gosh, we're going to be ready. We're going to be ready for lunch, not dinner. And then you're thinking, oh my gosh, now something's broken.
It's going to be breakfast.
Yeah, exactly. And then, but then you can't turn the temperature up. And I think one of the big takeaways is sometimes the thing that we're using to measure isn't always the best measurement, because that process has to take place, and that's just part of the process.
Mm.
You know, going backwards sometimes is what you need to do to move forward.
Interesting. Well, my last two questions is, if you were to go obviously you have the best barbecue here. Okay. So we'll just remove that off the table. But if you were to go somewhere to get barbecue, not necessarily here in this area, but like a different state, where's the best barbecue?
I don't know. I wouldn't say what's the best barbecue. I'd say what my favorites are.
Okay.
So
your favorites.
I'm a really big fan of Central Texas, which we follow a lot of that style. So like Aaron Franklin's arguably one of the most famous, for his brisket.
Mm.
He has a James Beard Award. I mean, like I got to meet this guy once. I went to his restaurant. You're waiting like 5 or 6 hours.
Jeez.
Line like crazy out the door. They do 100 briskets a day. They sell out.
Jeez.
Really, really cool. And there's a lot of great places in especially Central Texas, yeah, in the Austin areas. That's some of my favorites. It's very dry rub sauce on the side. And then there's another guy in the Carolinas, Rodney Scott.
Mm.
Rodney Scott Whole Hog Barbecue. So he does whole hogs, and it's a direct indirect method, and with a really spicy vinegar sauce. And we actually have a vinegar sauce that we call the Rodney sauce. It's kind of based off of his style,
inspired by.
Yeah. It's like really awesome. Vinegary, really, really spicy. It goes well, really good with pork. Those are two guys that are some of my favorites.
This is a terrible podcast. I'm like so hungry right now. Okay. Last question is, if you were to go to a barbecue, do you ever eat anybody else's barbecue, or you're like, let me bring the barbecue? You can be honest.
I mean, I do. If I'm going to choose barbecue,
yeah,
I'm going to like Texas.
No. Like your friend like invites you to a barbecue and you're just like, hey, come over for a barbecue. And you're like,
won't say no.
Really?
I won't say no. I mean, most of my friends won't.
Oh, that's probably
good. Yeah, they'll usually cook something else.
we cooked chicken.
Yeah. I mean,
can you cook it and bring it over?
I always feel honored when someone's cooking me a meal.
Oh, that's good.
The reality is, like, cooking's, it's a way of loving on people.
Yeah.
And, I think one of the reasons why we're actually so good at, say, brisket is because, mm-hmm, I've screwed up brisket more than anyone else has.
Yeah.
At least in this area.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've actually failed more, and that's why I think I'm good at it. And so when it comes to cooking,
just flush it out. Yeah.
Yeah. You just got to get up and keep making more mistakes.
Yeah. Well, if somebody hasn't tried your food yet, where do they go? Where are you located?
Yeah. I got to remember, 1300 Market Street, Suite 102, Thursday, Fridays, and again, catering's our main, mm-hmm, our main business right now.
Can order online.
You can order online. There's a pre-order button online. You could also, if you do have any events coming up, there's a catering book now button. Fill out a form, and then our catering manager will reach out in about 24 hours or sooner.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, if you haven't experienced the barbecue world yet of Jason Odell here in Redding, California, give him a holler, and you'll be amazed. So thanks so much, and we'll see you next week.